welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rezac. This is the show that gives you insights and resources on how to live a more courageous life. We'll be looking at men, the current state of masculinity, and how to create a more inspiring narrative for all men. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. Hope you're all doing well. Well, a liberal friend of mine, yes, I still have one, maybe two left, texted me before the President Trump verdict. Now, he fully has Trump derangement syndrome since he gets his news from CNN and MSNBC. And damn it, he's right about President Trump being a subhuman. He texted me that this is a historic day, and if Trump isn't sentenced and imprisoned, it is the end of the world as we know it. Oy vey. I didn't have the heart to tell him that I hardly paid any attention to the trial and that it won't make one iota of difference in the election or the direction of the nation. I paid about as much attention to the Trump shenanigans as I did January 6th. That is to say, next to zero. Both of these so-called historic events, to quote mainstream media, were, as usual for them, simply noise meant to distract. Want to know the effects the trial really had? Well, it's not what you might expect. Here is just a small sampling of messages that came my way on Instagram. Here we go. Ron Rules says, I'm voting for Trump. I don't even like him. I'm just tired of the left, tired of DEI and gun laws and tax hikes and climate nonsense and billions to foreigners. I'm not voting for the man. I'm voting for the pissed off bull in a china shop who wants to burn DC to the ground. Oh-ho. And here's one from Daniel Bostic. He says, I'm an RFK guy, and so I can't believe I'm saying this, but I just donated to Trump 24. I just can't take this anymore. These freaks are destroying our country. And Jasmine Keith, she's says, fine, I guess I'm MAGA now. All right, welcome. And Senator Eric Brakey says, I was undecided, but today's events have convinced me. I'm voting for Trump. Angie G, Mom Ang Trade, says, this independent is now voting for Trump. I have never voted for him before either. What a disgusting trial. Daniel Kotzen says, I have never voted for Donald Trump before, but I will certainly be voting for him now. The Democrats are a clear and present danger to truth, justice, and the American way. They must be defeated. MAGA. And the last one is, I am Leah, Bossy Leah on Instagram says, I had no intention of voting for Trump until y'all started this shit. So President Trump will be sentenced to a million years in prison or something, and all of this is so they can refer to him over and over again in the coming months as convicted felon Donald Trump, convicted felon Donald Trump. All right, do you think this really changes the destiny of America? Do you think the globalists win because of this illusory victory? Apparently some on the left think so, and it's absolutely comical to me. But then again, I'm not the one triggered. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting around the fire with a veteran and independent-minded American, and we talk about what our experience was like during COVID, viewing things as a critical thinker and independent, and our perspectives on President Trump, both as a man and as a commander-in-chief. We proudly represent the other side of TDS. Enjoy the interview. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Whitney Mason. Whitney is a veteran, a mother, a patriot, and a Washington State GOP delegate to the Republican National Convention this summer in Milwaukee. Here is my interview with Whitney Mason. Okay, I am here with Whitney Mason, veteran, critical thinker, Whitney Mason, independent, Whitney Mason. Whitney, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It is great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Tony. I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward. You and I had a great conversation, a couple great conversations, but one recently. And I was really excited to have you on just to unpack stuff. I think this episode's kind of, you know, I do a bunch of them that's kind of, you know, trying to bridge the left independence and the right and show the commonality and the common ground that we share as Americans, because I feel that's so lacking right now in mainstream media. And you were, you know, talking about how you're really an independent, but we've got all these things in common. And I've kind of voted that way over the decades as well. So I thought it'd be really great to chat with you. But I guess before we really get started, just give us a little bit of a background, like where you're from. You served in the military. Please tell us which branch and how long you were in the military for, and family, anything else you want us to know before we really get down to the issues that we're going to talk about.
All right. Well, I am a Seattle girl, born and raised. My parents are originally from the South. I'll say War Eagle. and it was the Army that brought them to Seattle for my dad's brief stint on active duty. And I chose to serve in the Marine Corps and served 11 years on active duty and 13 in the reserve. And it was the Marine Corps that offered me the opportunity to come back to Seattle. I had gone away for school, went to Northwestern University, have a bachelor's and master's in journalism. And then on active duty, I was in logistics and did a tour as a series commander at Parris Island, and then was a public affairs officer, both at headquarters Marine Corps in DC, and then at the Marine Corps Air Station in Beaufort, South Carolina. And then transitioned to the reserve. And so my last about 9 years in the reserve was here in Seattle. So the Marine Corps brought me home. And that assignment was really transition assistance, injured support. And then the last handful of years assisting the recruiting effort here in Seattle. So I'm a big animal lover. And also served as a foster parent. And I'm very proud to say that I have a nice relationship with my foster daughter, who is now in her early 20s. And so that's the nutshell version, Tony.
That's beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you for your service, by the way, to the nation. And, you know, you and I talked about, it's funny that we're going to be talking about some of the things that mainstream media is doing, and you're a journalist major, you know, it's like, you know, you talked that you really identify more as an independent, and I know a lot of independents. When you were talking about that, I'm like, you know, that's really more my vein as well. Like, I've kind of voted all over the map over my whole voting career, you know? And, you know, I guess my first question is, like, as an independent, like, what kind of values are most important to you, or which direction do you want to see the country going in as an independent?
Yeah. And again, I will say I have affiliated with the Republican Party because that just made sense.
Yeah.
And the the nudge was X number of years ago when we were asked to pick, you know, a party on our ballot.
Oh, yeah.
And so I did that. And my thought process at that point was, well, I certainly want to vote. And I do have a greater affinity to the Republican Party as a, you know, conservative than I do. The Democrat Party, which I had, you know, saw was going further left. So I think the values we could say that folks on both sides of the aisle would share the values of freedom being probably the number one, justice, pursuit of happiness, and, you know, faith in God. And I'm always going to say home ownership because my mom was a real estate agent for a gazillion years. And then when my reserve assignment transitioned to true equivalent of the drilling weekend a month, I got my license and joined her and have participated in assisting people with buying and selling. So I do believe in homeownership.
Yeah.
The American dream for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and you know, it's, You see so much division now. Like, I was talking with my wife, Lisa, the other day. We were like, God, do you remember when we were kids, it wasn't like some big thing to be on the other side of the aisle, right? Like, Republicans and Democrats, they were at families together. They were next door neighbors. You could have a conversation. It might get heated, but it wasn't like there wasn't all this name calling, and it didn't seem so polar opposite. And I'm just kind of wondering, like, are we really that different, or have we been made to seem like we're that different by the mainstream media, who is constantly pointing out the most extreme and using language in the most extreme way they can to, you know, to name call both sides and make it sound like these are two completely different creatures with nothing in common? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think the mindset to either be able to agree to disagree, mm-hmm. or my way or the highway, has become very evident.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seems like to me, you know, it's sort of intentional that there the attempt is to not, because we have a ton in common. I mean, you know, I sometimes forget, because I'm around a lot of conservatives and libertarians today, right? And so it's a silo for me, but I can kind of forget that there's a ton I have in common with traditional liberals and traditional Democrats. You know what I mean? But it's in vogue to sort of say, oh, those dumb people over there, right? Those normies, or, you know, like all the names that are called, or they call us, you know, the MAGA, whatever, like, you know, there's all this name calling, and it's almost like the one word or the two words or the phrase is meant to quickly disregard the other person's intelligence, value, you know what I mean? And I guess I wanted to kind of ask you, like, as we sit and meditate on, like, what do we imagine we would have in common with traditional liberals, let's say, forget the woke for a second, right? That's on the other side. That I think is getting even crazy for traditional liberals, the woke stuff. But, like, what do you imagine we would share with a traditional Democrat? Like, say, it could be a working class union guy, or it could be just a soccer mom who's more aligned with a Kennedy, let's say, than any kind of woke ideology.
Yeah, I used to think that the vast majority of us were kind of in that moderate range, left and right of center, mm-hmm. and that you had far fewer in the extreme right or extreme left. And that I think has shifted. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, again, if you can trace it back to general mindset. I don't know, our values. I don't know if you can trace it to, you know, reacting out of fear, mm-hmm. Whether it's fear of losing a friend or fear of not doing what the group is doing. I don't know. I mean, I do think there is common ground. You just have to find it. Yeah. And sometimes folks aren't going to let you find it because they perhaps are not interested in finding it. I would say in general, you know, for the folks who are kind of in that middle range, left and right of center, care and compassion would be something we do have in common. We may not agree on how to, you know, achieve the goal, but I think overall, most people are caring, compassionate people.
Right. I agree. Well, and I think most of the whole political spectrum would probably nod their head when you said, you know, we have to have safe communities. We have to have safe communities and the future for our children, we have to secure that. That has to be, and that could look a lot of different ways, but I think people would nod like, I want my children to thrive. I want my children to have you mentioned the American dream early. I want my son to be able to have private property ownership and home ownership. It's becoming really difficult, right? But I think most people, regardless of their political affiliation, would say, yeah, no, I'm down with opportunities for children, a better future for them. I don't know what that looks like. There might be disagreements. Education, you know, we've watched education really go spiraling downward in terms of, you know, test scores and all that stuff. And I think that's probably kind of appalling to both sides in a way. Like, I don't know, you know,
I really saw that as a foster parent, because there was this attitude of, you know, she's a victim and we need to feel sorry for her and we need to, you know, and I was like, no, let's create a happy and productive citizen. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that was a foreign concept to them. And so that was probably one of my very first indicators that this whole mindset, I mean, back then I couldn't have ever predicted what was going to happen and that what we've witnessed these last couple of years. But it comes, I think, back to mindset, you know, it's kind of that whole hand up accountability versus handout and will enable you to continue to make bad choices and, you know, live in such a way, ..
Right.
You know? So, yeah.
Well, where did you fall on the COVID thing? Like, were you in the safety crowd or in the freedom crowd?
Oh, I was definitely in the freedom crowd.
Yeah.
Waving the signs.
Yeah.
I wasn't even tempted. And I just kind of was shocked at how easily people were manipulated and how fearful they became. I mean, I really think sadly, a lot of people just kind of lost their minds over that. And I was kind of like, you know, let's just wait and watch. Let's just pay attention. Let's, you know, get some information. Let's use common sense. And, you know, my 88-year-old mother, when the mask thing first came out, her comment was, well, that's very unhealthy.
Right.
And I was like, you're absolutely right. It is unhealthy. And so, you know, we complied for any number of reasons. I'll always remember the first time going to the grocery store where the mask was, you know, mandated to enter. And there was somebody at the front of the grocery store thanking us. And I remember saying to him, I'm wearing it for you, not for me.
Yeah.
That got old after a while. And, you know, you kind of had to pick your battles, which I think we all did. And I just was amazed that so many people fell for it and just didn't, again, take a step back and ask, what's really going on here? You know, why are these things happening the way they are? And then just not being, you know, really, what's the right word? Aghast at, you know, the limitations that were being put on people, the stigmatization, the division, and then all of the hypocrisy that arose, you know, within a handful of weeks and months over, oh, you can do this, but you can't do that. Just shocking. And then just basic good health concept. You know, I remember that March just thinking, something's brewing. I think I'll double my vitamin D.
Yeah.
I don't need a doctor to tell me to do that.
Right.
You know, I think part of it too was having an innate belief in your immune system and how important it is to nourish your immune system. So this idea that there's a shot for everything and that there's a, you know, a pill for everything, you know, again, back to mindset. You know, that simply was not my mindset. The idea that you would, you know, live in your basement, triple mask before a vaccine came out and then you'd rush to go get that vaccine. I find it shocking.
And yet.
So when a family friend called to say, I'm a little concerned, your mom's not planning to get, you know, a vaccine. And, you know, we went round and round a couple different times. And finally it was like, well, she's not going to be able to go to church if she doesn't have that vaccine. And I thought, oh, that's what's going to happen. And sure enough. So needless to say, neither of us go to that church anymore.
Yeah. I was in an exact same position as you in that, I guess, you know, when it first unfolded, first off, I was in alternative health for 2 decades, you know, so I was steeped in alternative prevent, you know, I don't take any pharmaceuticals. I'm on zero pharmaceuticals as 57 years old, you know, and I'm in really good health. And you know, so for me, just because they rolled out something, rushed it out, didn't properly test it, it was by everybody saying it was brand new. We've never done this mRNA thing before, but here, everybody should take it. And I was like, well, let's pump the brakes and let's slow down. I'm not really quite sure, you know, what this is. Why do they want us to get it so bad? You know, that was another tell. Like, I played a lot of years of poker and there's tells. Sometimes somebody has a really shitty hand. They start acting a certain way. And I was seeing that behavior in Fauci and Gates and everybody that was like, everybody's got to get one of these things. And it's like, no, I don't think so. I'm calling you and I'm saying what you're saying is different than what is actually going on. And, you know, people say, we're calling me names and, oh, he's a conspiracy theorist because he won't trust Tony Fauci. But I think everything that unfolded afterwards sort of vindicated our position that, you know, well, I don't know if I want to take this. I'm just going to wait and see. And then as things unfolded, and then it didn't stop COVID, they, you know, people that were getting boosted were still getting it, and they were testing all over and still wearing the masks. There's still sometimes people wearing the masks that I look around. I'm like, that is clearly mental illness at this point, that people are driving around with masks on by themselves in their car. Like, they're like, you know, it is what it is. The damage was done. I kind of, like you, I might be more conspiratorial than you are. I saw it all as a social engineering experiment that, you know, and I have a bunch of theories about how it was brought about, COVID itself and stuff like that, and Fauci's role in it. But, you know, I was really aghast, and I was really super disappointed that I was such a minority. Like, I'm talking to you, and so, you know, you and I would have been wink, wink, and, you know, come on over to my house for dinner or whatever. But in my own neighborhood, I was like a total minority. Like, there was just nobody. I couldn't find anybody that thought the way Lisa and I did. You know, we were just part of the resistance. Like, and it really strengthened my resolve to be a stand for freedom and constitutional rights. And, you know, and so I did a whole bunch of episodes on it. And yeah, I don't know what else to say about it. It was super disappointing. It cost me a whole bunch of friends too, you know, people. Well,
absolutely.
That, you know,
and I think there came a point where you just felt like you kind of had to start taking a stand.
Yep.
And showing, demonstrating the courage, hoping that somebody would be like, oh, she's not wearing a mask, or
exactly,
she's not doing whatever. But no, I mean, I had a client fire me over not getting vaccinated. And then when I specifically asked, how is it that my vaccine is necessary to activate your vaccine's protections?
Right. Exactly.
And
great question.
Was I follow the science. And my response was, I follow the science too. And the reality is the scientists don't agree. And so we all have to make a decision. And like real estate, there is a risk with every decision you make.
Yeah.
So at that point, when that conversation was held, that was early 2022, I was very resolute. But I had determined early on, when, like you, I thought there's more to this than just, you know, there's more to this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, whether it's assessing the ability to control people through fear, whatever the case may be, I just decided I will not be coerced.
Yep.
And
yep.
I was actually surprised that the Washington State did not require licensing renewals to show proof of vaccine, since they were firing state employees.
Right. I know.
Other things.
Yep.
But I knew at that point, I will clean floors before I'm coerced into taking a vaccine that you are trying to convince people to take, and here's a free hamburger. I mean, there clearly was something behind all of that. So, and other indicators too, not that, you know, I mean, you know, when the Seattle Times is posting all these, you know, numbers, and you're like, okay, these are cases.
Yeah.
These aren't, you know, hospitalizations or deaths. These are cases. So it goes on.
Did you ever think about relocating states and moving to a red state at the time? Or were you like, no, I'm here? I mean, it got kind of dicey where I was like, you know, we're the front lines of what they're trying out here as a blue state. Like, they're going to move it here first, you know, before they're going to move to the next phase, before they do it in, say, Florida or Texas or, you know, any of the red states. That's like, you know, no, we're not doing this mandatory vaccine stuff. That's a bunch of BS.
Yeah, no, I started going to Idaho every month.
Oh, yeah.
And it was night and day.
Yep.
And it was, you'd cross that state line and you just feel this sense of, and I mean, literally leaving Seattle, you'd see, you know, little preschoolers being paraded around outside masked. And I'd get to, you know, North Idaho, and kids were outside playing basketball, just having fun. And I thought, what a difference this is going to be in these children's lives for however long this lasts, when they, you know, get older, you know, how impactful this is. Because, you know, masking little kids is really, I mean, I was literally at the grocery store this week. And a woman with her, you know, origami multi-folded mask was in line. And she had probably a three-year-old in the basket who was not masked. And, you know, he and I were smiling at each other and doing all that. And then she whips out her mask and he's, you know, tossing his head back and forth, trying to avoid the mask. She puts the mask on him as they go into the checkout line.
Oh, my God.
That was just this week.
Lord.
So, You know, what do you say? I mean, I believe in parental rights. My guess is she thought she was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And you know, that poor kid, yeah, no, absolutely. I was, and then, you know, you just reach a point where you're like, yeah, okay. And supposedly we're supposed to quarantine for 14 days. If we cross state lines, that's not happening.
Yeah.
Then you start just realizing just how just crazy and manipulated it all is. And then you just start pushing the limits a little bit. And then I just reached a point where I'm like, no more. And I'm, you know, if somebody asked me to put a mask on, I'll simply decline. And, yep. You know, if we have to come up with a different solution, then so be it, but I will not be doing that anymore. So.
Yeah, that makes two of us. You know, I think people can get their heads around, you know, the experimental jab. You know, they're pumping all kinds of stuff in there, including new stuff, and we just don't know what it does. I think that's pretty easy. That's not hard for people to go, that ain't good. That could be really bad for you. But I think people thought the masks were harmless. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, they're like, yeah, it's a pain, but it's not that big of a deal. And I'm like, I think it's a really big deal to force people to put something over their face and alter their breathing. And what
is it? It's very psychological. It's very psychological. And now you'll see some people still wearing masks. And I don't think it's because they're fearful of, you know, a virus. I think they like the, you know, being anonymous. They like, you know, they don't want to be identified. I mean, there are some other reasons why, you know, that group of people may be choosing to continue it. You know, it opened the door to that.
Right. But now they can wear it. Yeah. Yeah.
Psychologically, I think it's has done. It teaches kids to be fearful, you know, other than we won't even get into the medical side of, you know, wearing a mask like that. But right. Yeah, I mean, then there's that whole, you know, oh, I don't know why people wouldn't get the vaccine. Oh, it's just groupthink. And I thought, well, what? What are you guys doing?
Yeah.
You know, you're doing the group thing by thinking you all have to jump on the bandwagon. And then when you have somebody say, well, we're all vaccinated, but, you know, Whitney's not. So she's the one taking the risk. I stood up and said, I don't see taking a risk at all. I'm not putting poison in my body and I'm not the one who got sick.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you have to start, you start standing up over time to
Some
of this crap. And, you know, doors closed, doors open. And, you know, you just start kind of finding your people. Not that you agree on everything, but some of these very, very foundational things you do agree on. So
absolutely. I love your perspective on that. You know, Donald Trump, you're getting ready to go back to be a delegate. I'm loving that you're representing us. So thank you for doing that. Back to Milwaukee for the national convention. You know, and I've watched over the last, you know, few years, I've watched the left freak out like I've never seen before on somebody that just got elected president. And when Donald Trump was elected in 2016, I saw the birth of Trump derangement syndrome, because the left thought for sure the president would be Hillary Clinton, and it wasn't, it was Donald Trump. And then I saw them relentlessly attack him from the get-go, from day one. Like, that's really one of the things that woke me up, because I was a lifelong liberal at that point. But I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't seem right. Why are they attacking him? He literally just took his oath. Like, he is just stepping in there. Can we at least see what he's going to do? And it was just this emotional, hysterical, like, Trump derangement syndrome. And that's really what woke me up, because as I got more neutral and just watched, I became much more of a fan. I voted for him in 2020. And I'm still very much a Donald Trump fan for a bunch of reasons. I think he's the only one that truly loves this country for all the right reasons. I think there's a lot of lies made up about him. I feel like the mainstream media cuts and pastes certain things, and they're really good at creating propaganda about people and taking a context and then taking like one sentence and plugging it in and saying, see, he's this, he's that, when if you actually saw him speak, you'd be like, well, that's not what he was talking about at all. So I see him as being this kind of warrior for we the people, and I know even inside the Republican Party, I know from locally here, as do you, that there's a division. There's people that really don't like Donald Trump. You know, they're just like, he's crass. I don't like the way he's mean, is what they say, you know? And then I've heard, yeah, he's mean, but he's talking about pedophiles and Satanists a lot of times. So what you got to, do you have to be nice to them when you're referring to them, you know? And so I just want to, you know, and I just feel like we are in a fight for the nation right now. We've been, the enemy has been in our politics, in our schools. The globalists / communist Marxists have made big inroads in creating a culture and creating a narrative that's anti-American. And here comes this kind of cowboy with swagger, this New Yorker, this brash real estate developer, and he's saying, no, we're not doing any of that. We're going to do it the old school way. We're going to be proud of the nation. We're going to strengthen the country. And I just thought here, and then I'm going to pass it along to you. I just thought here today, I said, you know, he triggers a lot of people on the left. Almost the entire left is triggered by this man. And half of the Republican Party and half of it is triggered by this man. And I just thought, you know what? I'm okay with it. I'm happy that he's triggering people. It's going to wake people up, you know? And so rather than try to smooth Donald Trump's, you know, round edges, I say bring it on. I'm glad that he's triggering people. I'd say let's, you know, and I'm tired of being kind of like the silent majority or saying, you know, I can't always lead with I'm a Trumpster, you know, because people just be, oh my God, this guy. But I don't have to be so quiet about it because he is who I think is best for the nation right now because the war is on and we need somebody that has the country's best interest in heart. And it sure as hell isn't Biden. I know people like Kennedy, he's an independent. I'm putting my chips on the tried and true, you know, warrior that I believe is gonna restore the nation and restore sanity. So that's my little riff. I don't get to riff about Donald very much, but yeah, I'll pass it along to you. Like, do you have to keep quiet about it in your circles, or is it kind of, you know, is it kind of a mega circle, or do you have to be, you know, you have to tread lightly?
So to answer that question, in the company of reasonable people / Republican and conservatives, I'm very much a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I don't run around wearing the hat or the t-shirt.
No. Nope.
But I have been put in a situation where asked, and it was almost as if they were going to try to embarrass me. And then I will proudly say, I absolutely support President Trump.
Yeah.
I had to give some thought to him early on. I did not vote for him in the primary for the 2016 election, but I was more than happy to vote for him in the you know, the general, because there was no way in a gazillion years I would ever vote for a Clinton, let alone Hillary Clinton. And I had friends who had her picture on their refrigerators.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I offered them the tolerance of to each their own. And then when he was elected, admittedly, I was like, whoa, what's going on with you people? I mean, in reality, you vote, you don't always get your way. You hunker back down to live your life. And every 2 to 4 to 6 years, you know, there's an election.
Right.
And we just went through 8 years of Obama. So, you know, hunker down. But that's not what they did.
Nope.
And I came to appreciate Trump more and more and more. I mean, I see any presidential candidate and president number one commander in chief.
Yep.
And I believed he had, even though he came from a business background, he had, which is important because you're able to discern and make decisions and bring people together to, you know, accomplish the mission, so to speak. So I believed he had those qualities as a businessman. I like his scrappiness. I really didn't care if he offended anybody with a mean tweet, because there's a bigger picture here. And I don't think when you look at, you know, some of the larger personalities, for example, Putin or Xi Jinping or, you know, whatever, Mullah, Ayatollah, whomever, I mean, you know, they do a lot of stuff that's a lot worse than a mean tweet. So if he wants to mean tweet, that's fine. Because ultimately, you know, who do you want in the foxhole next to you? Who's going to stand up for you? And that was Donald Trump, none of these others.
Yeah.
You know, when I was on active duty, that's when the whole Monica Lewinsky thing went down. And I remember that was really my first thought of, you know, I'm not happy with the commander in chief's behavior. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the hypocrisy of it. and I have a problem with it. And then I'll always remember being like the Marine Corps representative for some student's tour of the White House and shaking Hillary Clinton's hand. And I was fairly neutral, if I recall. That might have even been before the Lewinsky thing. And, you know, I'm in my, you know, dress alphas and I'm, you know, shaking her hand. And I got this very limp handshake and this look of disgust. And I remember thinking, for somebody who champions women, you certainly did not demonstrate that to a young female Marine Corps officer. And right. It just was kind of like duly noted. So fast forward. So I was ultimately thrilled with how Donald Trump stood up to the powers that be. And I realized at that point, they can't control him.
I know.
Financially or otherwise. And I think that's actually a good thing. So it was really during his administration when, you know, you just kept seeing stuff happening left and right, the media crap and everything else that you'd be like, I remember, you know, during the Kavanaugh hearings, thinking, what else could they possibly come up with?
I know.
And now you harken back to the Kavanaugh hearing days, thinking, oh, those were the innocent times. But literally during that phase is when I, you know, figured out when the next district Republican meeting was going to be held. And I went to the meeting and said, what can I do? Because I'm seeing stuff here that really concerns me. And it's just, it's above and beyond normal, nasty politics, in my opinion. Yeah. And that was even before we realized what was really going down, you know, the COVID thing and all the other stuff that followed. You know, that was still kind of an innocent time comparatively. But I will tell people if they go on to a rant with Donald Trump, I'll be like, well, you're not marrying him. You don't even have to be his friend.
Exactly.
But, you know, I've become, I respect him more and more. And I am very happy to support him. And, you know, it's an interesting time. And thank God he's willing to step to the plate and make the sacrifice that he's making.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and his the thing I admire really about him, too, is like, I don't know, like I see the slings and arrows that he takes. And I'm like, God, you are God appointed. There has to be some sort of divine intervention here, because I don't know of any man or woman that could take the daily, like, I don't know how he does it, man. He always, you know, he gets up in front of the crowd and he always looks like he's doing great, you know? And I'm just like, I don't know how he does it, to be honest with you. He still finds time to golf and he's just like all these things. I'm like, he's a different breed, man. I don't, you know, it's something else to watch him operate, and with all the attacks that the left and the media send his way on a daily basis, that he's still able to, you know, have, you know, and he knows what's coming. And I agree with you that he makes a great commander in chief. I just want to ask you too, like, as a veteran, what are your biggest concerns right now? Like, through the lens of being a veteran, and then kind of what are you most optimistic about?
Well, I'm kind of on the periphery of the periphery at this point with regards to the military. I want to believe that the troops are holding the line, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I'm very concerned about leadership, and I'm concerned about recruiting. And, you know, I think we will pay a price where leaders have been promoted not based on merit or knowledge or experience. I think we are and will pay a price for that. Mm-hmm. And I think that recruiting is, I mean, I'm not involved, but I, you know, just what I'm hearing is that, you know, recruiting is problematic, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's all about numbers and manpower and training and readiness. So, you know, when I served, it was all about mission accomplishment and taking care of your people. And I don't know where they stand, but again, I'm going to believe that there are enough, you know, whether it's the, you know, the NCOs or the, you know, the young officers, that they're holding the line, and, you know, this too shall pass. So
what do you think of the, like, I've heard Trump in maybe one of his rallies, I remember seeing a video, and it was fairly recent, and he said, yeah, one of the first things that I would do if elected again is we're going to deport a lot of these illegals right away. And I'm bringing the military in at the border. That's, we have to have a strong move on that. And that's what I'm going to do. What do you think of that as a possibility? Do you think he'll follow up on that? Or is that just a campaign promise? Do you think that is definitely in the works in terms of a second term for him?
Well, I think he realizes it's that serious.
Yeah.
The question will be, you know, will there be those who are still, you know, in positions to thwart his efforts? Mm-hmm. But I think the reality is it's gotten that serious. Right. I don't know that he has that many choices to address this.
Yeah. There's on one hand, people want to make it sound like, oh no, all these people are really just coming in for a better life. But then you hear all these murmurings about, you know, young soldier age, fighter age, males being brought in, not looking like they're here for a better life. Let's just say, you know, that maybe they're being funded and there's, you know, that it's kind of an invasion. You know, there's a lot of fighting age men. It could be from the CCP, it could be from, you know, the cartels, whatever, there's a bunch of ways you could describe that, but that they're really being brought in under the guise of all the women and children that are coming in. They're kind of blending in, and, you know, there's been enough commentary and videos where they say, you know, this is not just people looking for the American dream. This is something else. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it was very predictable at the beginning of this administration, when you had Mayorkas and Harris and whomever else, you know, mm-hmm. stare at the camera and say the border's closed, mm-hmm. don't come. I think it was very clear what was going on at that point. So if this were a matter of, you know, opening doors to, you know, true asylum seekers and, you know, true refugees, it would have been done a completely different way.
Agreed.
And it would have been done. Mm-hmm. And that's not what this has been.
Right.
So I do think there's nefariousness going on. And I think a lot of people have been used as pawns whose lives either have ended or will be forever impacted because they are pawns of this whole, you know, mess. And you're leaving out the people who probably really do, you know, need that assistance. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, you've got, you know, these unaccompanied military aged men who are arriving and they're disappearing. So where are they? And what are they doing?
Exactly.
And, you know, I don't I do think we have cause to be concerned. So because you wouldn't do that otherwise. You just wouldn't do that. You know, we saw what happened in Europe in 2015. And, you know, there's. Again, I believe that there are people who've crossed that border illegally who are not here for nefarious reasons. They're here for a better life.
Yeah.
And they've been afforded an opportunity. And frankly, if I lived in Venezuela, I might take advantage of that opportunity too, simply because. So
exactly.
I do believe they're, you know, decent people, but they are being used. Meanwhile, you've got others who, you know, they're not interested in America. They're not interested in our culture or our values. And we're going to pay a price for this. I don't know what that is. And I do think that the next administration is going to have to really get serious about solving this. So.
Exactly. I'm in total agreement with you. I mean, yeah, it's going to be an interesting decade. Let's just put it that way, as this shifts and changes. It's really accelerated right now of everything that's happening. So you're going back to Milwaukee. What are you excited about going back there? Who are you gonna, just to participate? I'm really jealous. Actually, I was away at a family wedding for the state convention. So I couldn't attend as a delegate there. And, I was just kind of bummed out on the timeline. I don't know if I would have raised my hand for the national convention. I there's probably better people like yourself to do that, but I was really bummed. I didn't get to go to Spokane for that. I guess after attending the state convention here, what are you most excited about in terms of going back to Milwaukee?
Well, definitely to support President Trump and to represent for the state of Washington, and clearly just the life experience and the camaraderie are, you know, something that I think will be exciting and interesting. But I don't know, if there's going to be shenanigans, quote unquote, or not. I'll hold fast. But I'm very honored that I was elected. I put myself out there, not knowing if it would, be a thing or not, and it just worked out. So I'm pretty excited, and I do think, obviously there's a lot going on now. I mean, we don't even know if Trump's going to be present. We don't know if there's something brewing that is going to present itself, and we're really, it's going to be more than just having a good time. I think it's going to be very interesting.
It is.
I'm prepared, and thinking about, good, sensible shoes just in case.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm so glad you're going back and representing. You're perfect representative for us, for we the people here in Washington.
It's interesting because I feel like I'm kind of new to the party, the literal and figurative party, but a lot of people are. And I think we saw this both at the King County Convention and at the state convention when asked how many, is this your first convention? And I'd say well over 2/3 of the room raised their hands. Now, I was a brand new PCO, right before COVID hit. And so that convention was done virtually. I had no idea really what was going on, right? So this, for all practical purposes, was my first convention and certainly the first of the caucusing. And it's really a fascinating, not just experience, but system. And you figure the system's been in place for 200 plus years, where it all starts at the grassroots. And the grassroots definitely had a say at the state convention. It was great to be part of that and to see that. And also for it to be the state of Washington, because, we have some concerns about our state. And, it's going to be very interesting to see what direction the state, goes in after, the general election. I think we have a lot of really good candidates and common sense, good, non-politician candidates. And I think that's what's refreshing to see both, your wife, Lisa, and, Joe Lee Lansdowne and Victoria Palmer and many others who are just like, hey, I'm putting myself out there. I'm a citizen. I'm not a politician. This isn't something that I thought I would do. It's not necessarily even something that, but I'm going to do it. And that was the intent, really, is that, the Patriot soldier or the Patriot farmer, you serve your country and then you go home.
Exactly. No, and it's very much in the spirit. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's nice to be around so many people who are engaged and care. Many are much more experienced and knowledgeable, but we all bring a certain life experience to the table. And, we got a lot of problems to solve, quite frankly. So it's an exciting time. And then the work begins. So we just need to, see the results come out of this election. So,
beautiful. Yeah. That's lovely. Well, Whitney, thank you so much for coming on Basecamp for Men. It's so good to have you on the show and for you to share your insight and wisdom, and good luck back in Milwaukee. I hope it doesn't get too crazy back there, but I hope you come back with some really good stories to tell us about how it went down and what happened. And it's just it's an exciting time for Americans right now, but it's pretty edgy. I think both sides are pushing and pulling, and there's been a lot of dirty tricks being played and psyops, and there's just all kinds of stuff happening. And it's just, I think it's a really beautiful time to really be simple and, just stay in your values and stay in your principles and have a lot of good conversations with people that can listen and who you can listen to, and just share your wisdom with people. And, but thank you so much. I just really appreciate you. You're a great guest, and good luck back in Milwaukee, and we'll talk when you get back.
Well, thank you. I just want to say, I appreciate the opportunity, and I do think this is a time to speak up. Yeah. And, every situation is a little different, and who you're engaging with is different as well. But it's time to have the conversation. It's time to plant the seeds. And, we have a country to save, Tony.
Yes, we do. Absolutely. Okay. Thanks, Whitney.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed our interview with Whitney Mason. Please go support our sponsor, Stand Up Now Apparel, today at www.standupnowapparel.com and give them the code BASECAMP to receive 10% off and free shipping. Thank you, Basecampers, and we'll see you around the fire next week. If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.